setting them on her nightstand. He took her hand.
You are my reward.
He kissed her fingers, one by one.
I'm a reward that comes with a tremendous amount of baggage, but I care for you.
That's all I ask.
He touched her face with both hands, lowering his mouth to hers. When their lips touched, the energy between them sparked. Nicholas tugged her lower lip into his mouth and drew on it. His thumbs passed over her cheeks, and Acacia leaned into him. He released her lower lip and angled his head, smoothing his mouth across hers. Her arms lifted to clasp around his neck. She brought their bodies together, sighing into his mouth. His tongue slid against hers, and she tasted cinnamon.
You don't have to hide yourself.
Acacia reached a tentative hand to his prosthetic. He caught her hand.
It doesn't repulse you.
It troubles me, because I know someone hurt you. Others continue to hurt you because of it. But it's part of you, the way my scar is part of me. It's evidence of your strength, your courage.
He kissed her hand and turned around. She was about to call him back when she realized what he was doing. He'd positioned himself in front of the mirror that hung near the front door. She gave him privacy by fussing with the pillows. A minute later, his hands were on her shoulders. She turned. His eyes were cautious. She touched her lips to his scar.
I'm not hiding from you. You know who I am and who my father is. You know I accept you as you are.
He took her mouth fiercely. Then he unzipped her dress and watched it fall to the floor.
It was a lovely dress.
I'm glad you liked it.
Gingerly, she held onto his shoulder as she took off her heels. He caressed her neck and nudged her bra strap aside to taste her skin. He plied kiss after kiss across her collarbone.
I love your curves.
His hands covered her breasts over her black lace bra.
Good. I like to eat, so despite the time spent at the dojo, I'll always be curvy.
He pulled the cuffs of her bra down. Then, with murmured appreciation, he bent to take one of her nipples in his mouth. He teased the other with his thumb. She fanned a hand against his neck, urging him on. She kissed the shell of his ear and nibbled at it with the edge of her teeth. With a growl, he released her. He tugged his shirt out of his trousers and threw it aside. He stepped out of his pants, and his belt buckle clanged against the floor. They came together again with urgent kisses. Nicholas's hands slid to her backside, and he lifted her, wrapping her legs around his hips. He carried her to the bed and looked down at her with longing.
I delight in you,
he whispered.
What you say, your laughter, the way you speak.
He rested his hand on her abdomen. She felt her insides flutter.
Come here.
She tugged his arm, pulling him atop her.
I like your weight.
That's good.
He chuckled, bracing his forearms on either side of her shoulders.
Because I like how my body feels against yours.
She parted her legs, and his hips nestled between them. His fingers quested the catch to her bra and unfastened it, dragging it over her heated skin.
You're lovely in everything.
He dropped the bra to the floor.
But you have a beautiful body. Look how your skin glows in the candlelight.
He blew across her nipples and watched them constrict. He teased them, catching them between his thumb and his forefinger. Pleasurable sensations shot across her body, increasing her desire for him. She didn't want to be selfish. She traced the ridges of his abdomen above the waistband of his dark blue boxer briefs. He pushed himself against her hand, and she stroked him firmly.
Delicious.
He licked her breast and transferred his attention to her nipple. She reached around him to push his underwear over his hips. It took a moment for him to free himself. Then he sheathed himself with a condom and moved between her legs. He caressed the curves of her cheeks, his gaze watchful and serious.
Aren't you happy?
Her finger traced his dark brows.
Happy to be with you, of course. But I'm afraid I'm out of practice at being happy, mon amour.
Her hand rested on his backside, and she pressed, nestling him more tightly between her legs.
Do you feel this?
Yes.
His expression brightened.
We create something together we don't have apart.
That makes me happy. His mouth slid against hers, and his tongue dipped inside. She lifted her hips in encouragement, and he thrust forward.
I need a moment, he said roughly, tearing his mouth from hers.
She touched his face.
You feel so good.
They moved in concert, and she lifted her hips to meet every stroke, but Nicholas was determined to make their connection last. He would not rush. Her hands traced his strong shoulders and the bumps of his spine. She clutched his backside with both hands and squeezed.
Look at me,
he demanded when her eyes fluttered closed. She saw a slight vulnerability in his eyes, something in that moment he could not hide.
It's good, she panted. So good.
Her head lolled back and her eyes closed. His pace quickened and pushed more deeply. She met him stroke for stroke. He kissed her neck, tonguing the skin wetly and catching it with the edge of his teeth. He went deeper inside her, and she felt the pleasure build, building, building.
Please, she begged. Her eyes flew open. Please!
What do you need? He almost stuttered. He clenched his jaw as he quickened his pace.
More!
Her fingers dug into his backside. He lengthened his strokes, entering her more deeply and moving faster, faster. He angled his upper body and lifted her breast to his mouth. He tongued her nipple and sucked hard.
Yes,
she released with a cry. He kept moving, extending her pleasure. She wrapped her arms around him and hid her face against his neck. He pulsed inside her. Then he grew still. She touched his cheek below his scar.
Are you all right?
I was just thinking about the fireworks that always seem to explode when we're together.
We're lucky.
Yes, we are. He paused and lifted his head. The way we are together is very different from how it has been for me in the past.
For me as well.
He brought her hand to his chest.
You've stolen my heart. And even exchange,
she smiled.
You have mine as well.
Chapter 45 The following morning, Acacia awoke to the sound of her front door opening and closing. She cursed at the intrusion and pulled the covers over her head. Underneath the sheets, she was wrapped around Nicholas's naked body, her head resting on his chest. They'd made love many times the night before, their romantic activities extending well into the morning. She was far too tired and too comfortable to be disturbed.
I'm sorry, boss, but there's a BRB agent who wants to speak with Mademoiselle.
Kurt's voice cut through her sleepy haze.
Damn!
Nicholas's hand flexed against her backside, below the sheet. He squeezed her affectionately and kissed her hair.
I'm sorry, Amour.
She groaned and carefully extricated herself, taking care to keep her body covered with a sheet. Nicholas sat up. He looked as if he was going to answer the door.
I'll handle it.
She reached down to kiss him. As she approached the entrance to her apartment, Kurt opened the door.
Cassie!
Luke's eyes met hers. He wore jeans and a black leather jacket. His face was unshaven, and he looked tired. His mouth curled in disapproval as he took in her mussed hair, sleepy face, and bare shoulders. He eyed the sheet in disgust. Her irritation flared, and she pulled the sheet more tightly around her.
I texted you. I said we'd talk later today. You've been saying that for days. Who's here?
Luke looked over her shoulder into her apartment. She followed his gaze as he found Nicholas sitting on the edge of the bed, his upper body bare. Luke's face reddened, and he gave her an accusing look.
What's he doing here?
I'm not dressed.
Her voice was firm.
I'll explain everything later.
He grabbed her arm.
Cassie, come into the hall.
No touching.
Kurt intervened, placing his hand on Luke's arm.
I'm BRB,
Luke said angrily.
Get your hand off me, or I'll have a dozen agents here in 5 minutes.
Acacia stood between the two men.
It's all right, Kurt.
She pulled her arm free of Luke, and Kurt released him.
Now isn't a good time,
she said.
I'll call you later.
Time to go.
Kurt moved back, taking Acacia with him.
Wait.
Luke moved to block the closing door, but Kurt stood in front of him. Luke's blue eyes blazed.
Cassie, come into the hall. He can't stop you.
The owner of the apartment has asked you repeatedly to leave, and you've refused. Nicholas walked to the door, a blanket wrapped around his hips.
I know all about you, Breckman.
Luke's eyes narrowed.
I'd recognize that Frankenstein face anywhere.
Connor!
Acacia swore at Luke, pushing him back before anyone else could move.
Cassie!
Luke looked wounded.
Don't speak that way to him.
Her voice shook.
Are you joking?
Luke's nostrils flared.
This guy is an arms dealer. You asked me to protect you from him, and now you're fucking him?
He shook his head.
How do I know he isn't holding you against your will?
Because I'm telling you he isn't.
Acacia snapped.
Speak to Kate. She came over to see us yesterday. Speak to Madame Ouellette downstairs.
I came here to speak to you.
Yes, and as you can see, I'm fine. I'll explain everything later, but don't insult the man who has my heart.
Luke passed a hand over his mouth.
I can't believe this. You know what? We don't need to talk. Not now.
He muttered a curse.
Call me when you get your head together.
He turned and walked swiftly toward the staircase. Kurt entered the hall and closed the door behind him. Nicholas locked and bolted the door from the inside. Acacia sank into his arms.
I'm so sorry. What he said was terrible.
He lost you. That's enough to make a man forget his manners. She looked up at him.
How can you be so calm? I wanted to punch him.
It's a good thing you didn't. Nicholas lifted her hand and formed it into a fist. He kissed it, a wicked gleam in his eye. My legal team might have difficulty making that charge go away. She cursed in Portuguese. Nicholas gave her a half smile. He examined her knuckles. Did you mean what you said?
Did I mean what?
That I have your heart.
Of course.
Nicholas puffed out his chest. See, I'm calm because I won, and my woman can swear in at least 6 languages.
I'm working on Japanese.
She lifted up on tiptoes.
I'm going to make coffee and pão de queijo.
What's that?
Fantastic Brazilian cheese bread.
To the winner goes the spoils. He bent her backward to kiss her.
He showed up at your apartment when your new hot man was there? Holy shit!
Kate turned to face Acacia as they walked under the great glass pyramid at the Louvre. Kurt followed.
Then what happened?
Luke insisted I speak to him. I wasn't even dressed. I was wrapped in a sheet. Then he insulted Nicholas.
Saying what?
Acacia shook her head. Kate had been introduced to Nicholas when his scar was covered. She couldn't mention it.
It doesn't matter. I told Luke I was with Nicholas, then Luke told me to call him when I got my head together.
Wow. That was awkward.
Incredibly.
Acacia and Kate had had lunch at a quiet café in the Latin Quarter before traveling on foot to the Louvre. As ever, Acacia didn't go anywhere without Kurt.
He isn't going to tell Nicholas everything, is he?
Kate whispered in English as they waited under the pyramid.
No.
Acacia replied.
But because of what happened at the Victoire, and other things, Nicholas has insisted I have a bodyguard.
Cool.
Kate bobbed her head.
I should have brought you and your bodyguard to my meeting with my thesis advisor. He's a jerk. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I spent our entire lunch complaining about him. Thanks for agreeing to come here. I thought this would be a quiet place to talk.
There are several adjectives one might apply to the Louvre, Acacia thought, but quiet is not one of them. She looked at her friend in concern.
Will things be all right with your thesis?
Kate frowned.
I don't know, but I'm not giving up.
They stood admiring the pyramid that rose above them, as well as the pyramid that hung from the ceiling, bathing the underground entrance in bright Parisian sunlight. Tourists crowded the area, taking photographs and selfies.
Luke showing up and being a jerk was a dumb move on his part,
Kate observed.
Do you think he'll be able to talk to him after he cools off?
Acacia glanced over her shoulder at Kurt, who wore a blank expression.
I think I owe Luke an explanation. I'm the one who involved him in my life again, but I don't want a repeat of what happened this morning.
A man in a very handsome dark green suit rounded the corner and walked toward them, flanked by a smartly dressed woman on one side and a uniformed security guard on the other. Acacia swore under her breath. Kurt stood in front of Kate and Acacia as the entourage approached. Kate leaned sideways so she could see around Kurt's massive body.
Mademoiselle Santos?
The green-suited man stuck out his hand and smiled. Louis Richard. Acacia shook hands, trying to recover her manners. The man in front of her was the director of the Louvre. This is Daniel Dubois, the director of guest relations, and Etienne Gauvin, the head of security, he said. Acacia shook hands and quietly introduced Kate and Kurt.
Nicolas called,
the director explained, smiling broadly.
I didn't realize he was in Paris. He just arrived.
Acacia forced a smile, still feeling tense.
I'll need your bodyguard to sign in with security. Then you'll be free to enjoy the museum.
Would you care for a personal tour? Madame Dubois would be happy to be your guide.
That's very kind.
Acacia gave Danielle an appreciative look.
But we're here simply to explore a few rooms.
Of course.
The director rubbed his hands together.
We'll just step into Madame Dubois' office to complete the paperwork.
Acacia looked at Kurt, who nodded encouragingly.
It's all right. Rick texted me about the protocol.
Acacia's smile slipped. They followed the Louvre staff to Madame Dubois' office and completed the paperwork. Kurt was required to show several pieces of identification along with his permits. The director shook Acacia's hand once again.
Please give Nicholas my best greetings. I hope I can prevail upon you both to come to the opening of our new antiquities exhibit in September.
Acacia's heart leaped.
I'd like that very much. Excellent. I'll be sure to send Nicholas's assistant the particulars. Enjoy your visit.
With another smile, Acacia, Kate, and Kurt departed the office with the head of security, who escorted them through the checkpoint and into the museum. Acacia noticed they'd skipped the metal detectors. She'd forgotten that Kurt, like Rick, always carried a sidearm. Yet the director hadn't insisted he surrender it. She found the fact curious.
You didn't tell me you had connections like that.
Kate took Acacia's arm after they passed through the entrance. She spoke in English because of Kurt, although Acacia was fairly certain he knew English too.
I didn't know,
Acacia said. She eyed Kurt, who seemed unperturbed by the entire situation.
Getting back to Luke, Kate released her friend's arm, it's obvious he's hung up on you. He kept coming by the apartment while you were gone and seemed genuinely concerned. I'm sure he was shocked that you returned from your vacation with someone new.
Acacia nodded.
I'm sorry it was awkward, but I want to hear about Nicholas, the new guy.
For reasons known only to Kate, they decided to venture toward the Mona Lisa, braving the crowds headed toward the Denon wing. The friends quickly moved past the decorative arts exhibit and entered the cavernous room that displayed the Mona Lisa, along with works by Botticelli. Acacia kept close to Kate, and Kurt kept close to both of them. Acacia spoke in Kate's ear, so she wouldn't have to shout above the din.
Nicholas was a guest at the Victoire. His security team intervened when someone attacked me. He was worried the assailants would come to my apartment, which is why I left. Why does he have a security team? And how is he so cozy with the director of the Louvre?
Acacia hesitated.
He's a businessman. I think he's a patron of the museum.
Kate gave her a suspicious look. They approached the Mona Lisa from the side in an attempt to inch their way forward for a better look. The crowds were almost impenetrable.
Did Nicholas go with you when you left Paris?
Kate raised her voice so they could be heard over the chattering of the crowd.
Yes, he was traveling on business anyway.
Sounds awfully coincidental.
Yes.
Acacia couldn't dispute the fact.
Come on, there's an opening.
Kate pulled Acacia forward through a gap between two separate clusters of people. They were now within a few feet of the famous painting.
It always appears smaller than I remember, Kate mused, and darker.
The cashier regarded the masterpiece with a critical eye.
But the perspective is amazing. I wish I could paint,
Kate sighed.
You can. Just buy some art supplies in the Latin Quarter and set up an easel by the Seine. Everyone else does.
Kate frowned.
I'm not talented. Have you seen some of those paintings? Lack of talent doesn't stop others from trying. You don't know if you're talented until you try.
Acacia, you're someone who can do anything.
I can't do everything. I can't make a souffle, I can't do a cartwheel, but I never know what I can and can't do until I try.
That should be on a t-shirt. Kate moved forward a few steps and pulled out her phone. She snapped a few photos.
Do you want to take a picture?
Acacia shook her head.
Not today.
We can explore the other rooms. Thanks for humoring me. I like to visit her when I'm stressed. Acacia grinned.
I understand. Mona Lisa is non-judgmental, and she always has a smile.
They weaved their way back through the massive crowd and into the hall. Acacia breathed a sigh of relief. She didn't like crowds, even with the security guard blanketing her like a coat. Kate guided her to the French art exhibit nearby.
So you went away with your wealthy businessman. Where did you go? Switzerland first. That's where he's from. Then Santorini.
Santorini? That doesn't sound like business.
It was. But he took me to the beach and...
Kate moved closer.
And?
Acacia lifted her hands.
And we happened.
Huh.
Well, Santorini is the place for something to happen. But I bet he was smitten with you when you met him. He didn't like me at first.
Acacia made a face.
He was used to dealing with a different concierge.
Sexual tension. Kate winked. It's a powerful motivator.
I'm glad you have a new man. You've been alone since I met you. Nicholas is hot.
But? Acacia looked at her friend curiously. Kate gave Kurt a look designed to intimidate him, but to no avail.
Nicholas seems sad to me, she whispered. He doesn't fit the profile of the tortured artist. But take him out of the black suit and that's what I see. He lost his sister. It marked him. I'm sorry.
Kate stopped, facing her friend.
That explains it. Just be careful. If he's an unhappy person, eventually he'll make you unhappy too.
Acacia stopped, stunned. Her eyes found Kurt's. He gave her nothing by way of a reaction. Acacia turned around and fell back into step with Kate, her words of warning ringing in her ears. Chapter 46. That evening, Acacia and Nicholas opted to have dinner in his suite at the Ritz. In the privacy of his rooms, he forewent the prosthetic and left his scar uncovered. Acacia was noticeably quiet. Kate's words had chastened her and made her wonder about her rapidly developed feelings for Nicholas. He'd noticed her change in disposition, but hadn't commented on it. Later, they made love on the floor by the fireplace. Without words, they'd communicated through their bodies, their pleasure deep and intense. Afterward, they lay in a naked tangle of limbs on the floor. They hadn't even bothered with a sheet. A light sheen of sweat covered their skin. Acacia's leg was thrown over his, her arm across his abdomen. She rested her head near his heart, while his arms wrapped her shoulders.
I love you.
His words came out of nowhere. Acacia lifted her head in shock. Nicholas looked pained. His dark eyes were worried, his brow furrowed. He touched her lips.
There's no need to reply. I've been bursting to say the words for some time. I'm afraid they just slipped out. You love me?
Her lips moved against his fingers. He withdrew them.
Yes. I've loved you almost since the moment I saw you at the Victoire. You're incredible, Acacia. I'm mad about you. You love me despite my complicated past? You told me you accepted me, scar and all. That's how I feel about you, but much more deeply. I love you too,
she confessed.
I realized it last night. I love this man. I can see his heart and his soul in his eyes, and I don't ever want to be without them.
Nicholas brought his mouth to hers and kissed her.
I didn't know,
he said, as he brought their lips together over and over again.
I was afraid if I told you, I'd lose you. But the words could not be contained.
I've been afraid for so many years. I'm not afraid anymore, not while we're together. I've waited a long time for you.
And I for you,
he pledged. He touched her face in wonder.
You love me.
With all my heart.
She touched her hand to her chest, just below the necklace he'd given her, and then brought the same hand to his heart. He gave her a blinding smile.
I'm very relieved to know my feelings are returned.
She tilted her head to the side.
You couldn't tell? Every time you touched me, I felt I was giving up my secrets.
You're very expressive during sex, that's true. He kissed her nose playfully.
So were you.
She straddled him and began tickling his ribs. He howled with laughter and tried to bat her hands away. She laughed with him.
And, of course, you told your ex-boyfriend I had your heart. That made me brave.
Good.
I've got you now.
He clasped her hands together, binding her wrists.
No more tickling.
She gave him a look that was meant to be sincere.
Liar.
He kissed her palms. This is one of the reasons I love you.
You make me laugh.
She smiled down at him. They were quiet for a moment. Acacia took that opportunity to examine his face.
Will you tell me about your scar?
Her voice was gentle. Nicholas released her hands, and they rested on his chest.
You already know about my sister. Her death threw my life into chaos. I didn't have the network I have today, but I had some wealth and some influence. I began my own investigation. A group of men had been seen in the gallery on two separate occasions prior to the robbery. They didn't act like art enthusiasts. I followed their trail into Bosnia, but they found me first.
What happened?
They gave me this.
He pointed to his scar.
They told me the next time we met, they'd kill me and my parents. I vowed at that moment I would become someone they could not kill.
Nicholas.
She touched his face.
You're lucky to be alive.
I came back to my family disfigured. My own mother couldn't bear to look at me.
I'm sure that's not true.
It was. Although perhaps she's come to terms with it. He conceded.
You didn't want to have the scar removed?
Nicholas gritted his teeth.
I wanted to stand in front of the man who gave it to me, and do the same to him. I wore a prosthetic. I lived in my parents' house, obsessed with finding the person who'd bought the artwork from the Bosnians. I lost my fiancé because of my obsession.
I didn't know you were engaged.
Acacia's voice was quiet.
I was working in London at the time. We met there. I had brought her home to meet my family the night Reva was killed.
Oh, Nicholas.
She touched his shoulder.
What happened to your fiancé?
He scrubbed his face.
She lived in London, where she was working. I took a leave of absence to live in Colony. She didn't want to let me go, but I didn't have it in me to continue with her. I'm the one who ended it.
Did you ever think of reconciling?
Years later I tried, but I'd hurt her so deeply she couldn't trust me.
Acacia's sigh matched his own.
You know who killed your sister?
I know the men involved, yes. They boasted about working for someone powerful, but then they disappeared, and I was never able to pick up their trail.
Do you think they worked for Yasmin's Russian?
They were wise enough not to say. In the beginning, we didn't know if the thieves had been commissioned by someone to steal the artwork, or whether they were opportunists who would look for a buyer. But when I found them, they made it clear they'd been commissioned. Unfortunately, Reva surprised them the night of the robbery. They said her death was an accident. They'd only meant to knock her out.
I'm so sorry.
Nicholas's expression grew fierce, dark fire burning in his eyes.
When I find them, I'm going to stand in front of them with this uncovered.
He gestured to his face. And I'm going to put a bullet in their brains. Acacia stilled. Nicholas's eyes glinted. Returning the art to my parents is important, but I can never give them back my sister. I'm going to find the man who ordered the theft, and I'm going to kill him and his crew.
But that's... Acacia swallowed. Wouldn't it be better to turn them over to Interpol?
So the crime boss can deny involvement? So he can plead guilty to charges of possession of stolen property? No. Nicholas's voice grew harsh. They all need to pay.
That's murder.
Nicholas's gaze was cold. No, Acacia. It's justice. She sat back and stared.
I thought you wanted to get the art back.
It isn't enough. That man destroyed my family. My parents can't bear to be in the house we grew up in because of the memories.
You think killing them will give them closure?
Yes.
Nicholas.
She bent over him.
Listen to me. Killing just brings more killing. It will never end.
What do you know about it? He spat. Carefully, she moved from atop him.
Think about the part of the world where I was born. Think about my brothers and sisters in that region. I know all about killing.
Nicholas sat up. This is different. This isn't terrorism.
Terrorism is an act of violence brought about by someone who is a law unto himself. What's the difference between the Russian and my father? What's the difference between you and the Russian, if you do this?
Acacia, Nicholas warned,
you're both powerful. You have intelligence networks and security guards. You have political power. What's the difference?
I'm not corrupt. I didn't start this.
If you are a law unto yourself, then you are just like them. You can't decide who lives and who dies. You can't become the law.
No, but I can be the agent of justice.
Whose justice? Yours? Your sister's?
She came closer to him.
Would your sister want you to become a murderer?
Nicholas stood, his hands clenched in fury. Look what they did to my face! Look what they did to my sister! Acacia covered herself with a sheet and stumbled to her feet.
Nicholas, listen to me. You want justice. You deserve to have it. But an eye for an eye makes us all blind. Killing broke my family apart. We couldn't stay with a man who had become a law unto himself.
He jerked his head in her direction. I am not your father.
But you will become him if you do this.
Acacia. Nicholas lowered his head, so their eyes were at the same level. Once this is done, I'll be free. Free to live. Free to love.
Once this is done, you'll wear the chains of killing. The Russians' people will come after you, or your family, or me. Don't you see? You'll be placing all of us at risk.
He took her hands in his.
You said you loved me. You have to understand why I must do this.
Her eyes searched his. She saw desperation and desire, force of will and affection. But it wasn't enough.
If you love me, don't do this.
He released her. His expression was resolute. I must.
I love you, Nicholas. The thought of being without you tears me here.
She pushed her fist against her heart.
But if you do this, if you kill that man, I can't be with you.
He grabbed her fist between his hands.
Acacia, if you were to think about it more, you'd realize I'm right. I've been thinking about revenge and death for almost 30 years. I know you're wrong. Promise me you won't kill anyone.
His spine straightened. I can't. She extricated herself from his grasp.
Then I have to go.
Acacia picked up her clothes, strewn across the floor.
We can talk about this. There's nothing to discuss. You've said it all.
She fled to the bathroom.
Acacia, wait!
He followed her. But the door was already locked. Chapter 47. As soon as Acacia stepped out of the bathroom, Kurt was at her side. She deposited the necklace Nicholas had given her on a table in the suite's front hall. She scribbled a quick note, and told him she didn't think it was right to keep his gift. She retrieved her purse and shoes as quickly as she could and headed to the door. Evidently, Nicholas had shut himself in his bedroom. Without a word, Kurt escorted her to the elevator and down to the front door of the hotel. He hailed a taxi and rode with her to her apartment. He made a call along the way, but Acacia blocked out the words. She was too busy bleeding inwardly. When they arrived at her apartment building, she paid the driver, and Kurt helped her out of a taxi. He preceded her into the building. Shots cracked just as Acacia crossed the threshold. Kurt fell to the floor before he could retrieve his sidearm. Blood pooled on the front of his dark shirt. Acacia screamed. She tried to flee, but a masked man with a rifle grabbed her arm. She struck him in the throat and kicked the side of his knee, sending him crumpling to the floor. She pushed open the door and stumbled onto the sidewalk. But before she could get her bearings, something heavy and wide struck her across the lower spine. She pitched forward and crashed to the ground. Winded, she gasped for air. Someone grabbed her by the hair, and something sharp pierced her neck. Her heart thumped irregularly as darkness took her. Chapter 48. Acacia came awake with a start. She'd been dreaming she was drowning. Water filled her lungs and made it impossible to breathe. She gasped. The hot, humid air was stifling. No wonder she'd found it difficult to catch her breath. She sat up and instantly regretted the decision. A dull ache in her lower back flared to a sharp pain that wrapped around her middle. She fought back nausea and examined the small, square room. Bright sunshine streamed in a small window set high in the cinder block wall, indicating it was midday or later. She'd been unconscious for hours. She breathed slowly, in and out, trying to manage the pain while ignoring the heat. A steel door presumably led to the outside. Unfortunately, the door lacked a doorknob. Another door opened into a bathroom. The only furniture in the room was the cot she was sitting on and a small side table. A pitcher of water stood on the table next to a small metal cup. She poured water and drank it greedily, though it was warm. Acacia examined the ceiling. The overhead lights were off, probably because of the stifling heat. She was sweating and she'd barely moved. She closed her eyes and listened for traffic or any other recognizable sounds. She could hear the pathetic ventilation system rattling through the covered shaft above her, but nothing else. She opened her eyes. She wondered if the ventilation shaft was wide enough to afford her a means of escape. But first, she'd try the window. The cinder blocks had shallow grooves between them, some shallower than others. Years ago, she'd taken a rock climbing class. She hadn't climbed since then, but she knew the basics. The difficulty of climbing the wall was much greater than her skill level, but she had nothing to lose. Her back complained as she lifted herself from the cot. She looked in vain for her purse, but of course, whoever had taken her had likely taken it as well. She was still dressed in the previous night's clothes, white jeans that were now filthy, and an orange silk long-sleeved top. A large rip in the silk opened below her right arm. She wore black leather shoes with no heel. At least the shoes were suitable for climbing. She hobbled to the wall and stretched her arms upward, fingers questing for depressions she could hold. Then she lifted her left foot, ignoring the complaints from her spine, and found a toehold. Carefully, she transferred her weight to her left foot and lifted her right. She had difficulty finding a hold for the right and flattened the side of it into the deepest groove before transferring her weight to her left foot again. Her hands sought and found higher holes, her stomach scraping against the wall as she lifted her right foot still farther, searching for a place that would take her weight. Bit by bit, she climbed, not giving up until finally her right hand reached the windowsill. Straining, she pulled herself up. There were bars on the window, covering what seemed to be plexiglass. Outside, beige pillars, topped with arches, lined the courtyard, which featured a central fountain. Part of the courtyard floor was an intricate mosaic of small tiles, but the courtyard was dirty and dilapidated. Many of the tiles were broken. A doorway stood to her left and one to her right, but there were no other visible windows on the main floor. Shuttered windows dotted the second floor, and two massive palm trees stood at the opposite end of the courtyard, flanking a tall double door with rusted iron hinges. Acacia's arms and legs began to shake, and she quickly retraced her moves, climbing down to the concrete floor. Based on the architecture and palm trees, she was likely somewhere in the Middle East. As if in confirmation, she heard the sound of the muezzin leading the call to prayer. Her father must have kidnapped her. She covered her face with her hands and took a long, deep breath. Instead of praying, she ignored the muezzin and tried to organize her thoughts. Rick would have gone looking for Kurt. She thought of his vacant stare as he lay on the floor of her apartment building, blood staining his chest. He'd promised to protect her when they were in Dubai. He'd died protecting her in Paris. She knew so little about him, she wondered if he had a family. Acacia stifled a sob.
Think, she told herself, you can grieve for Kurt later. Now you have to find a way out.
She surveyed the room and looked for anything that could be used as a weapon or a means of escape. The cot had a simple steel frame and slats overlaid with a thin mattress. She had sheets and a blanket as well as a pillow. If the window were large enough, she could climb out and lower herself with a rope made of sheets. But the window was far too small for her to pass through, and it was barred with iron. If she stood the cot on its end, she could use it as a ladder to the ventilation shaft. She wasn't sure how steady the cot would be on the uneven concrete floor, and she'd have to figure out a way to remove the cover of the ventilation shaft. As an escape plan, it held promise. She could try after dark. The door to the cell didn't have a doorknob or a lock she could pick, and the gap between door and doorframe was exceptionally slim. Even if she could remove one of the metal slats from her bed, it would probably be too wide to pry open the door. But again, it was something she could try. Acacia crossed to inspect the bathroom. It had a shower stall, toilet, and sink. She turned her back to the mirror and lifted her shirt. A long horizontal bruise of dark purple and blue cut across her lower back. She pushed at it and winced. If she smashed the mirror, she could wrap the shards of glass in strips torn from the bedsheet and use them as a weapon. She didn't want to kill anyone. As she'd learned in martial arts, her goal was to escape an attacker by disabling him. But if a shard of glass was the only means of escape she had, she'd use it. She inspected the shampoo in the shower. The Arabic and French label declared it had been made in Morocco.
Morocco?
Of course, she had no idea where she was in Morocco. Without money or a passport, returning to Europe would be difficult. She didn't have Nicholas and his myriad of contacts and diplomatic passports to rely on.
Nicholas?
She wondered where he was and what he was doing. She wondered if he was searching for her. She'd left him. So if he washed his hands of her, it would be her fault. But the man she knew, the man she still loved, would not do that. Acacia believed down to her soul that Nicholas's love for her and his nobility of character would not allow him to surrender her to her fate. Somewhere, he and his people were looking for her. The thought bolstered her hope. She heard a door open. Acacia stood in the doorway of the bathroom and stared straight into the eyes of a young, dark-skinned man, dressed in loose-fitting, sand-colored clothing and carrying a military rifle. He spoke in Arabic.
Your father returns tomorrow. Do you need anything?
I don't understand what you're saying,
she answered in French. The man scowled and continued in his own language.
I was told you know Arabic.
I don't understand what you're saying.
She repeated. She hunched over dramatically and placed her hand at her lower back.
I'm in pain. I need a doctor.
The man gave her a confused look and exited. The door clanged shut behind him. He hadn't seemed angry or aggressive, despite his weapon. He'd held the door to her cell open while he spoke to her. She wondered if he'd return. If he did, she'd be ready. She stood behind the cell door and waited. And waited. More than an hour passed before something clanged against the door and metal scraped against metal. The door swung inward. Acacia grabbed the edge of the door with both hands and pushed as hard as she could. The door caught someone and knocked him to the floor. She leapt over his sprawled body and wrested his gun from his hand. A guard shouted at her from the other end of the hall. Acacia didn't know how to use a rifle. She squeezed the trigger, but the gun didn't fire. Frustrated, she hoisted the rifle over her shoulder and ran. A doorway at the far end of the hall opened into what looked like the courtyard. But just as she approached the threshold, someone stepped into her path. Acacia continued running, then, at the last minute, she executed a roundhouse kick to the guard's head. He fell to his knees. She struck him in the head with the butt of the rifle and kept on running. Outside, the sun shone bright and hot. Her steps echoed across the mosaic tiles as she ran past the fountain and toward the high, wooden doors. She yanked the door handle, but it wouldn't budge. Furiously, she searched for a lock. She heard footsteps and turned around, but before she could defend herself, something struck her from the side. For the second time in less than 24 hours, everything went dark. Chapter 49 The ache in Acacia's back had been replaced by a dull throbbing in her skull. She lifted her hand to probe her head injury. It came away with traces of blood that must have seeped through the bandage. The room spun. She closed her eyes.
"He will be punished. We had orders not to touch you."
A man's voice spoke Arabic.
"I speak French," she whispered.
"I know what languages you speak, Hanin."
The voice radiated contempt. Acacia moaned.
"Can I have a glass of water?"
She heard movement and the sound of liquid sloshing. A metal cup was placed in her hand. She opened her eyes and lifted the cup. She downed the water in a few swallows.
"Don't you recognize me?"
the voice mocked. Acacia's gaze lifted to her captor, a man with black hair and eyes. He wore a dark beard, carried a rifle, and wore military fatigues.
"Hello, cousin. It's Ibrahim."
Acacia carefully schooled her reaction, determined to give away nothing. Ibrahim pointed to her head.
"There was a lot of blood. Said got carried away, but that won't happen again."
"What do you want?"
she asked in French. The man walked to the wall near the door. He leaned against it.
"Are we really going to play this game? I know you understand me. You look like your mother, Hanin."
"That's how we knew it was you."
Acacia bit her tongue. She wondered if they had her mother, but was too afraid to ask.
"Your father has been planning this for days, but he was called away before you arrived. He'll be back tomorrow."
Ibrahim lifted his chin in the direction of the table.
"There's food."
"Please," she asked in French. "I'm hurt. Can I see a doctor?"
"No. Fatima is a healer. She bandaged your head."
"Can I have a pen and paper? Something to read?"
Ibrahim shook his head at her and left. Acacia closed her eyes and tried to ignore the dizziness. She had a concussion, she was sure of it. The room continued to spin. The door opened again. Acacia opened her eyes and saw Ibrahim place a pen, a piece of paper, and a Quran on her bed. He left without a word. She snatched up the items and examined the pen to see if it could be useful. The scent of food wafted from the nearby table. She was too nauseated to eat, but she noticed a metal spoon sitting next to her meal. She picked it up, turning it over in her hands. They'd given her a weapon. Despite her concussion, Acacia wasted no time before trying to escape. By the light of the bathroom, she took the ballpoint pen apart, placing the pieces on a towel on the floor. Try as she might, she couldn't envision a way to use them to pry off the cover of the ventilation shaft. It seemed to be affixed from the inside. She'd even tried hanging on it, but the cover remained firmly in place. The slats attached to the underside of the cot with metal screws. She used the handle of her spoon as a screwdriver to remove one of the slats, but it was too wide to slip between the door and the doorframe. She hid the slat and screws underneath her thin mattress, hoping she could find some use for them. Sitting on the closed toilet and contemplating the pen pieces, her thoughts strayed to Nicholas. Rick and his team would scour the crime scene for clues, if the Paris police didn't get there first. Perhaps Luke would be there as well, although it wasn't likely, given what she'd said to him at her apartment. In the small, dank bathroom, Acacia allowed herself the luxury of a few tears. She cried for Kurt, she cried for Nicholas and the love she felt for him. While her opposition to killing remained unchanged, she regretted her decision to leave him, and not only because she'd been kidnapped shortly thereafter. She loved him and he loved her. She even liked his parents, and she believed they could build something extraordinary together. Rather than issuing an ultimatum and running off, she should have stayed and worked hard to present him with an alternative to the path of death he seemed hell-bent on. She should have tried harder, rather than giving up. Sitting in the mysterious compound in Morocco, Acacia made a vow. When she escaped, she would return to Nicholas and try to work things out. The thought fortified her. She dried her eyes and hid the spoon in her sleeve, determined to use it to attack one of her guards the next morning. Yes, her sensei had told her she was the weapon, but in this situation, she believed she needed something in addition to her physical skills to escape men with automatic weapons. She was against killing, but she was not against hurting someone in self-defense. Acacia slept fitfully. Her head hurt, and the wound seemed to be on fire. She checked the bathroom, but there was nothing she could use as an antiseptic. She was awoken very early by the first call to prayer. She went back to sleep until the call was repeated. She groaned and sat up slowly. She felt tired and dizzy. Nevertheless, her mind continued to devise escape plans. A short time later, the door opened and someone flicked the lights on. A short, rotund woman wearing a black headscarf and black robes appeared, clucking at Acacia. The door slammed shut behind her.
"You need to clean up."
The woman spoke Arabic, carrying a bundle of fabric in her arms.
"Your father will arrive soon. He wants to see you."
Acacia decided to give up the pretense that they'd kidnapped the wrong woman. Her father wouldn't be fooled. Undeniably, she looked like her mother. If necessary, her father and his men could take blood and test her DNA.
"I have a concussion,"
she said quietly in Arabic.
"I'm Fatima, the one who bandaged your head. We can't wash your hair because of the wound, but I can help you shower."
Acacia bristled.
"I can shower myself."
"What if you fall?"
Acacia allowed her shoulders to slump.
"All right. But I need something for the pain."
The woman nodded and rapped on the door. It opened, and she departed. Acacia quickly slipped the spoon under the mattress. She could overpower the woman, but she'd still be locked inside the cell. She needed to find a way to take the spoon with her to meet her father. A short time later, Fatima returned with fresh water and white tablets that she said were for pain. Acacia had no way of knowing what the pills were, but she downed them with a glass of water. They must have been something strong, because her pain diminished within 20 minutes.
"Are you my father's wife?"
Acacia asked.
"I only keep house. My husband is dead, and so are my sons."
Fatima was matter-of-fact, as she ordered Acacia to the bathroom. Soon she was clean and dressed in a long-sleeved t-shirt and pants, along with the traditional caftan. Fatima re-bandaged her head, exclaiming in horrified tones how ugly the wound was. Acacia contemplated the ugliness that could be wrought on a carotid artery by a spoon. The woman helped to fix a headscarf over Acacia's bandage, hiding her hair. When Fatima's back was turned, Acacia slipped the spoon from under the mattress and into the long sleeve of her t-shirt under her caftan. Ibrahim entered the cell and told Fatima to leave. She scolded him in Arabic, telling him Acacia was hurt and needed rest, before lumbering off. Ibrahim brought Acacia into the hall. No less than 3 men stood guard, each carrying a rifle. She elected not to try to overpower them and run, conscious of her dizziness, as well as the fact that she didn't know the layout of the compound. The more they showed her, the better her escape plan would be. They marched her through the courtyard and into a side door. They rounded to a set of stairs and climbed to the second floor, stopping in front of a wooden door. Ibrahim knocked. A faint voice ordered them to enter. When Ibrahim opened the door, Acacia could see sunlight shining from a large window on the far side of the room. An older man sat behind a large desk, a laptop computer in front of him. The room was ordinary and dilapidated, as was the furniture, although the laptop appeared new. Whatever opulence her father had displayed in Dubai was now muted. He wore his signet ring and an ordinary set of white robes. Acacia was struck by the banality of his appearance and his office. She was struck by the banality of terrorism.
"Leave us,"
he ordered Ibrahim. The men closed the door securely on their way out. Acacia looked at her father. He pointed to a chair.
"Sit down."
She sat. He regarded her for some time. He resembled the man she used to know in some respects, but his eyes were dead. Whatever warmth she'd once seen there, or in his expressions, had now vanished.
"You look like your mother,"
he observed in Arabic. Acacia didn't respond. His eyes narrowed.
"Where is she?"
"She's in Brazil."
"Where in Brazil?"
Acacia shrugged.
"If you found me in Paris, you should be able to find her in Brazil."
Her father lifted from his chair and came around to the front of the desk. Before Acacia could react, he struck her across the face. In a flash, she was a little girl in Amman again. Her mother was on the floor crying, and Acacia was hanging off her father's arm, trying to stop him from hitting her.
"Where is your mother?"
Omar's voice was low, controlled. Acacia lifted her hands to protect herself.
"I don't know."
He stood over her. Then, for no reason she could discern, he returned to his seat. He stared at her from behind the desk. As the shock of being struck faded, so did her memories. While she inhaled and exhaled deeply, she studied him. If he came at her again, she'd take him to the floor. He appeared to be unarmed. Yet even if she made it to the window and dropped down to the courtyard below, it was far from certain she'd be able to make it out of the compound before his men caught up with her. Her dizziness would hamper her ability to run and defend herself. So, she sat where she was and seethed with anger. This man, who stared contemptuously from across a desk, was lucky he didn't have a spoon sticking out of his neck. His eyes became slits.
"I wasn't sure if you saw me in Dubai. Obviously you did, and warned your mother. You look like her. You even walk like her."
"What do you want?"
Acacia redirected the conversation.
"Why am I here?"
He crossed his arms and ignored her questions.
"Your mother had an apartment in Recife. It looks like she left in a hurry. She hasn't contacted you since then, and you haven't contacted her."
"I don't know where she is."
"Perhaps."
He waited, as if anticipating a response.
"Father, please. I want to go home."
"You are home."
"I live in Paris."
"That life is over."
He gestured to her head.
"If you try to escape again, you will be beaten."
Her gaze flicked to his desk.
"Can I have access to a computer?"
"So you can contact Mossad?"
He spat on the floor.
"No."
"Mossad?"
Her eyebrows shot up.
"What are you talking about?"
"The man you whored for."
Her father's low voice dripped with poison.
"The rich Jew you were with in Dubai. He's Mossad."
Acacia shook her head.
"He's a businessman. He isn't a spy."
"He's Mossad."
Omar's voice was contemptuous.
You've shamed me and your family. You've abandoned the true faith. You will be punished, and so will your mother. How long has it been?